I want to have a healthy lifestyle. I want to live a healthy lifestyle. I hear that a lot. But what that means is that this is something that's a long-term goal for you. You want something sustainable. You want a healthy lifestyle for the rest of your long, long life. That's wonderful. But these extreme all or nothing challenges and short-sighted tactics are not going to be a great match.
Hello and welcome to the Women and ADHD podcast. I'm your host, Katie Weber. I was diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 45, and it completely turned my world upside down. I've been looking back at so much of my life, school, jobs, my relationships, all of it with this new lens, and it has been nothing short of overwhelming. I quickly discovered I was not the only woman to have this experience, and now I interview other women who, like me, discovered in adulthood they have ADHD and are finally feeling like they understand who they are and how to best lean into their strengths, both professionally and personally. Okie dokie. Before we begin, I would love to share with you this review from a listener named ADHD Mom on the Apple Podcast platform. It's called Getting to Know Ourselves. This podcast is amazing and introduces us to so many women with recent or late in life ADHD diagnoses. Not every interview fully resonates for me because we're all different, but there's been at least one tidbit in every episode that was impactful. This is a really valuable resource for newly diagnosed women and is also giving me additional resources with each woman interviewed whose business falls in an area I would use. Excellent. Well, thank you, ADHD Mom, for that excellent review. I feel so fortunate to have been able to interview so many women with ADHD from so many different countries, and I feel like a broken record when I say I am endlessly grateful for the positive reviews and the support I have received along the way. I really, really appreciate the time and effort it takes to stop what you're doing and to write a review. So if you are a listener of this podcast and you've found these interviews to be helpful and you've been meaning to write a review, this is your friendly reminder to head over to Apple Podcasts or Audible, or you can leave feedback on individual episodes on Spotify. And if that feels like too much, and believe me, I totally get it, you could also just go and quickly hit those 5 stars. In fact, why don't you just pause right now and do it? I promise we will wait for you. Okay, one more thing before we get started with the episode. I want to let you know that the podcast will be changing to a monthly format moving forward. If you've been listening for a while, you know that I've gone back to grad school to pursue my license in clinical mental health counseling. Now, not only do I credit my diagnosis of ADHD with this decision to return to school, seriously, before I knew I had ADHD, I never would have returned to grad school because I genuinely believed I was too dumb. Creating and hosting this podcast has opened up so many avenues and opportunities for me since it all began back in December of 2020. Entering the field of mental health counseling is really important to me. I strongly believe that ADHD-informed and trauma-informed therapy is essential for the unique needs of neurodivergent women. So I cannot wait to expand my own skills and expertise and integrate therapy with coaching for my clients. That said, after 3.5 years of weekly episodes, the time has come for me to take a step back so I can concentrate on my academics and my practicum and my internship and all the fun things that lie ahead on this new career path. I love to stay busy and do all the things, but I'm also learning to have balance and practice self-care and yada, 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 all that fun stuff I work on with my clients. But I love interviewing women and hearing about their ADHD diagnoses and their journeys. I literally never get tired of it. It really feeds me, and I'm just not ready to let go entirely. So I am compromising, something we are not traditionally very good at with all or nothing ADHD thinking. And for the time being, I will be releasing new episodes on the first Monday of each month. And who knows, at some point I might go back to a weekly format or a fortnightly format. I have no idea. I will keep you posted. In the meantime, here we are at episode 186, in which I interview Holly Darcy. Holly is a military spouse, a mother, a health coach, and a competitive athlete who brings a unique perspective to the challenges and triumphs of navigating life with ADHD. Diagnosed at the age of 33, Holly has become passionate about learning all that she can about how ADHD impacts women young and old. We talk about the many ways in which ADHD affects our relationship with food, our bodies, and long-term fitness goals. Holly has a passion for helping adult women build confidence and consistency toward their health and fitness. So we talk about her personal training and lifestyle coaching and some of the common goals that she works on with her clients. Plus, since Holly is a military wife, we talk about structure and discipline, which can be appealing to so many of us with ADHD. And we talk about the pros and cons of having to relocate so frequently. I talk a lot about my personal trainer throughout this episode, so I just want to give an official shout out to Marnie Bothmer, who is phenomenal. You can find a link to her website in the show notes. And I interviewed her for the Women in ADHD podcast for episode 125. And I also interviewed her with Alex Gilbert on the ADHD Lounge podcast for episode 17. So there are links to both of those episodes if you want to hear more about Marnie's incredible journey with multiple sclerosis and ADHD. And finally, just to clarify, in my conversation with Holly, I mentioned the recent backlash against Joe Wicks, who is a fitness influencer and a celebrity in the UK. Now, I incorrectly said he is a nutritionist. He is definitely not a nutritionist. I want to make that clear. He is simply yet another uninformed white guy who has strong opinions about a topic he knows very little about. Anyway, I put a link to a HuffPost article about the controversial statements he said on a podcast recently, as well as some of the responses from the ADHD community. I also put a link to a great rebuttal reel from Dr. Joshua Woolrich. So if you want to follow an opinionated British white guy who actually knows what he's talking about, he's definitely the one you should be following. All right, without further ado, here is my conversation with Holly.
Well, hi, Holly. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, Katie. Thank you for having me. It's so nice to meet you.
It's so nice to meet you, too. And I'm really excited. I feel like fitness and the relationship with our food and body is something that I certainly love to talk about. And I think it's a huge issue for so many of us with ADHD. So The connections must have been firing at full throttle when you first kind of came to that realization about ADHD. So I'm really, really curious to hear your story. You were listening to a podcast from a fitness professional a couple years ago. What happened?
So I had been training for a long time. I've been a personal trainer since 2014. And I just said, after I had my second daughter, we were in the middle of the pandemic, and I said, I'm going to compete for a body, you know, compete in a bodybuilding show. I had so much fun with it. It was really wonderful. And I just happened to be listening to a podcast. It was a fitness, like bodybuilding related podcast. And there was a physique competitor on there, and she was just kind of talking about her journey and her experiences with competing. And she had also mentioned, they got into a conversation about how she had recently been diagnosed as an adult with ADHD, and she was a mom. And she kind of, I don't even remember which podcast, I need to go back and find it, but she started to talk, the interviewer started to ask her, the host started to ask her about how did she even know? And, you know, what were some of the things she was struggling with? And she just was describing my life. And I was just really caught off guard. I paused the podcast, and she had mentioned the CHAD website. And so I immediately went on and took the screener. And I think there's like a women's specific screener. And by the end of the day, I had already booked an appointment with my primary care provider and had a conversation with my husband. And there is some familial history with ADHD on my dad's side of the family. And so when I was talking with my husband, he was laughing. I said, Chase, does this sound like me? I'm going through the screener. And he starts laughing, and he's like, yes, like you can't even get through a movie without getting up three times and taking notes and like moving your body in some way and asking a bunch of questions. And then you have to be doing something to even pay attention. So anyway, I was diagnosed in October 2022 at the age of 33 with ADHD. And that became a new obsession and interest and hyper-focus, just learning all about that because it filled in so many blanks for me and answered so many questions and just was like, came with some grief too, but also was just really, it's been really wonderful overall, life-changing in a positive way overall.
Yeah. I was actually just having a conversation the other day with a friend who is much younger and
she was diagnosed and we were talking about like, would, if you could wave a magic wand and not have ADHD, would you? And she was like, absolutely, I wouldn't. I mean, she meant absolutely, I would get rid of it. She was like, you know, it's fine, I manage, but I wish I didn't have it. And I was like, I don't even know how to separate myself from ADHD. Like, I really, it's so pervasive in terms of like just looking back over your life through that new lens and just look and being like, I don't even know who I would be without it. I feel like it's there with me in everything I do. Do you remember when you were taking the CHAD specifically that you were like, oh, this is my life?
Some of the things it talked about, I want to say interrupting others is something that I definitely related to. Struggling with time management and definitely, you know, feeling, I totally can relate to that concept of time blindness. I think definitely that, like, anytime I come across anything about masking or rejection sensitivity dysphoria, like big emotions beyond just mood swings, but like being able to kind of being labile with my emotions was very relatable. As I kind of poured through more information, being able to like hyper-focus on certain subjects if they were very, very interesting to me, but then like just forgetting things, going upstairs to go grab the same thing 3 different times. So most of them, and I do have the inattentive and hyperactive. So I'll be sitting in church and I'm just like moving something, or right now I'm playing with the little fidget thing and it helps me focus.
Yeah. You know, that I remember, like, as a child, my father was always madly taking notes in church and he never once referenced them, but I'm like, oh my God, that was a totally ADHD coping mechanism. And he didn't realize it. And that was one of the hardest things as a kid, was sitting in the pew and like, oh my God, trying to stay quiet and pay attention was one of those things that I'm like, oh yeah, the signs were there all along.
Very, very much so. I stopped, like, I was listening and doing all my fidgeting, and then I heard something when I was at church last weekend and I grabbed my daughter's coloring book and wrote it down because I just couldn't forget. My husband's kind of looking at me like, are you okay? I'm like, no, I just can't forget this.
So now you mentioned that your daughter was also diagnosed recently, right?
She was.
Did you have any idea before you were diagnosed?
I had no clue. I had never, I'm telling you, Katie, up until I had listened to this podcast, I'd never even thought about, I didn't even know that, you know, like during the pandemic, it was like there was this surge of diagnoses and it almost became something to where it was like kind of trending. I didn't even know that. I just happened to be listening to this podcast and it was, you know, because there's more research coming out on it and people are going through a pandemic and they're being diagnosed. And like, it was just like, I didn't really even know much about it other than just kind of some of the stuff with the familial history and, you know, some things that my brothers went through, but their own, I mean, this was back in like the mid 90s when it was very different and understood in different ways and not as, you know, well understood as it is now. And continues to be, but I really didn't have any clue. But her and I are so similar in certain ways. She's much like her dad in other ways, but wow, I have a very, very deep appreciation and understanding for the way her brain works and how it shows up for her now. She's in middle school. And so it's been interesting to see and to reflect on her own childhood and things that she's really excelled in and also things that she struggled with sometimes. And so it was very affirming and really encouraging to receive that positive diagnosis, because regardless of whether she did or not, we were going to continue to support her in the ways that we know best how to. But it just made sense. It just really made sense when we did, you know, receive that confirmation.
Yeah, that's one of the things I'm so grateful for in terms of, because I was also diagnosed before my kids, which is rare. I mean, I feel like a lot of us in adulthood, it's the other way around. Like, I just am so grateful for the language that I have that I didn't before when it came to where my kids were struggling. Because I've said this on the podcast before, like, my son, immediately I was like, oh yeah, like, we are the same. And so if I have it, you have it. But my daughter, I never in a million years would have guessed until I started interviewing women and saw how differently it presents for so many people in childhood, especially kids who are really, really bright and do really, really well in school and end up compensating in really, really anxiety inducing ways. And so, but I'm just so grateful for the fact that, like you said, like, I feel like, I don't know, I just feel so much better equipped to approach them when they are struggling, as opposed to, you know, what my parents would have done, which is take away some, you know, they were like, it was all punitive. And I think our generation, most of our parents were like that. You know, it was really much more punitive mm-hmm. than it is now. So I feel like I'm just so grateful that the diagnosis gives that opportunity to talk to our children in a different way. But it was funny because when you were talking about like not being aware of it at all, neither was I, although even my therapist mentioned it to me many times before I finally got diagnosed. But now that I'm approaching menopause and I'm like deep into perimenopause and hormones and like everything I can find about menopause, because I'm turning 50 this year and I'm just like, I'm like all about it. But every, it's like, there's like a new person every day on the internet who like some influencer who's like, why is nobody talking about menopause? I'm like, lots of people are talking about it. You just now are interested. And I'm like, that kind of speaks to our brains where I'm like, it's out there. It's just that it's like something had to, like a switch had to flip from being like, yeah, it's this thing that's kind of in the periphery to this is everything and really zeroing in on it.
Yes. All of a sudden you can relate or you go through an experience and it's just like, oh, now it becomes, you know, super interesting and very personal. And I agree with you that now I am thankful in the way that I was diagnosed first and, you know, was able to advocate for myself and then, you know, go on to do the same for my oldest daughter. And, you know, it makes sense too, we'll do the same for my youngest daughter. And because I'm able to advocate for her and just be able to be a little bit more proactive than if maybe I didn't have that language and that understanding and interest in learning all about this.
So I'm curious, what is your theory as to why so many of us have such a disordered relationship with food in our bodies?
Okay. We only have an hour, right? We only have an hour.
I know, that's such a big question. I know, I'm sorry. I just sprung that one on you. Because again, that's one of those situations where I'm like, is this ADHD? Is this diet culture? Is this being a woman? Is this a, like, I never know what is at play when it comes to having, you know, a difficult relationship with exercise. But I also know, like, now having worked with so many ADHD women, it's really, really difficult for a lot of us to have just like a casual, healthy relationship with anything, but especially when it comes to nutrition and exercise. And I think, you know, I don't know if you've been following all of this backlash against the British nutritionist who was quoted recently. He apologized, and I think he was roughly misquoted, but he basically was like on a podcast and said that ADHD is caused in children by sugar. And so there was this huge backlash about, you know, sugar doesn't cause ADHD. But then there was a backlash to the backlash, which was like, yeah, it doesn't cause ADHD, but it's also really not great. So
no, it definitely can exacerbate symptoms in a lot of people.
Right? It's like screens. I'm like, I don't think screen use is causing ADHD, but I also think it's a conversation that needs to be had, especially when it comes to children. So it's like, where do we find that line? And I feel like that, like just having, like, I don't even, what's the word? It's like laid back relationship with this stuff. Like, I feel like we're just so all or nothing when it comes to these topics. And I'm curious if you've had any like revelations since your diagnosis about like, what is it about the ADHD brain that sends us into such disorder?
I think a lot of it is that not, and you know, I can't speak for everyone, but I see a lot of that all or nothing thinking or perfectionistic kind of thinking that's very, and, you know, on the ADHD side of things, it's like, think about, you know, a lot of us struggle with task initiation. And then there's like the task commitment and follow through, which definitely shows up for me in other ways. But I don't know if it's women. I don't know if it's just like kind of our culture. I think there's many different layers to that. So much of it is like what we see almost, you know, like on social media and just out there in the marketing and kind of like what we see as like, when we grew up and kind of the diet culture that we grew up in, and it was either, you know, low carb or low fat, and everything just swings to these big extremes, and the sexy stuff is what stands out, you know? So it's always like the sustainable, you know, have moderation, have balance. That doesn't really catch people's eye, you know? So I think there's some of that. I don't know if it's people with ADHD might be impacted more by that. I think because we have a tendency to have that like all or nothing thinking. I think that also there's this element for a lot of us that's like, I know for me, like with my ADHD, like I, for such a long time and still, you know, I still struggle with it sometimes of feeling like there's something wrong with me. Like I always felt like an outsider, even if I wasn't, I always felt like an outsider or I felt like weird. And my oldest daughter has said to me so many times, Mom, am I weird? Or, you know, I'm weird, but I'm okay with it. Like she know, you know, so we always feel like there's something wrong with us. So I think that when it comes to making change, it's this frame, we're coming into it with this posture of like, well, there's something wrong with me. And so I need to fix myself. And so I see a lot of that. And so something I really try to focus on, if someone does come to me, they have some goals for, say they want to lose some body fat, you know, I can help them with that. But that can't be the only thing that we're focused on. And it can't be the only definition of success. Because honestly, helping them do that is not, it's not going to, in my experience, it's not going to give them the things that they think it's going to give them. And so I try to layer in, hey, let's focus on performance. And for women, I think especially, you know, the feeling of feeling strong and seeing your body perform feats that you didn't know that it could do in the gym or, you know, however you like to move your body, building self-efficacy with, you know, I work with a lot of women who are in their late 30s, 40s, 50s, who are getting into, a lot of them are moms. They've got kids who are now school age or older, and they are finding that they have a little bit more time to focus on themselves, but they're like doing it in a way that helps them feel kind of like find themselves or find out like kind of another kind of dimension of themselves that they've never felt before. And trying to focus on this, an element of success that celebrates how they're feeling more energy or they're feeling less stressed out, their digestion's improving. So finding the wins and the improving the way that they feel and not just focusing on great, good job, your body's smaller, we're doing awesome. I don't know, there's so many different layers to that, but I think that coming from it of like this point of view of like there's nothing wrong with you. And also like for me, I try to explain to people, this is something that I'm obsessed with it. Like I'm so passionate about it. I love it. I find it, for me, it's been really positively life-changing because I didn't grow up athletic. I didn't really grow up very fit. And I had a lot of harmful messaging. We'll just, you know, leave it at that as a child and growing up. And so for me, it was like when I found my fitness and I found my athleticism, it was really a positive thing for me. And I'm thankful that I did have some positive influences. I also had some negative influences around me, but I had overall some really positive influences. I think also because I have ADHD, when I found like, wow, I can affect positive change in myself. I can be an agent of change. It really built some self-efficacy. It built up more self-trust for me. And so while my clients are not obsessed with this stuff the way that I am, I can help them feel that sense of like, wow, I feel like these things are helping me physically feel better, mentally feel better, and improving that kind of self-trust or self-efficacy, whatever you want to call it. And it carries over to other levels and areas of their life as well.
If you have ADHD, it can often feel overwhelming to find the right treatment. And then when you finally do get an appointment with your local clinician, there's no guarantee that they will have the adequate background or understanding of ADHD in adults, especially in women. You might end up leaving that appointment more confused and disheartened than when you entered. That's where Done comes in. Done is an online ADHD care platform that can get you all the resources you need to help manage your ADHD. With experienced clinicians who know exactly what to look for, you can start getting personalized care as soon as today or tomorrow. Take a free one-minute assessment and book an appointment with a licensed ADHD clinician as soon as the next day. Get continuous care, one-click refills, insurance coverage, and 24/7 care team support with Done for just $79 a month and pharmacy copays as low as $0. Visit get.donefirst.com/podcast to learn more. Again, that's get.donefirst.com/podcast. Done. Turn ADHD into your strength.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous. Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
One of the things I really, when you reached out to me and I was started lurking and looking at your website instead of doing a little back, like I love your messaging and I love your approach. And so, and I feel like that is a really difficult balance, you know, to kind of use the right wording and really, you know, how do I emphasize? Because there is a lot of ways in which the fitness industry can promise things to women. And I, you know, and I do think that one of the things with ADHD is we do sort of feel like you said it so well, which is like, we really feel like we are, you know, trying to figure out what's different about us and trying to figure out what's wrong with us. And I've said that so many times on the podcast. And even now in my counseling curriculum, where I'm like, if your client comes to you and says, what's wrong with me? That should be immediate. That should immediately, like, you know, be a red flag where you should look into ADHD, because I feel like that is like a universal question that so many of us asked ourselves, especially in therapy. So I'm like, that when you think about that point of view, which is like, there's something different about me, there's something quote unquote wrong with me. And so maybe I need to fix it through this. Maybe I can fix it through this. And so I think a lot of the time we do fixate on our physical body, right? Or we fixate on food is one of those things that's really easy to control. And so we look for like, so we look for those things that in our life that are easy to control. And, you know, so much of like, or we become people pleasers and perfectionists because we are sort of trying to create this vision of ourselves that might fit in with. You hit the nail on the head when you were talking about like, so many of us have such low self-worth and such confusion in our life that it makes sense that we would be looking for ways to prove our worth. And one of the things I think I talk about with a lot of my coaching clients is like, one of the things that an adult diagnosis can do is often like, it's an opportunity to feel like you have worth. And therefore, when you feel like you have worth, you're able to take care of yourself. And so you sort of shift away from proving your worth to actually like, what does my body need? How do I take care of myself? And that's like a really wonderful shift. But again, I'm also like, I'm at that age where I don't know how much I care less about what people think of me. I care less about having a flat stomach or all those things that I would have cared about when I was younger. So, you know, I saw a video the other day that was talking about like, hormonally speaking, for women, you know, in their 40s and approaching menopause, you want to stop doing like really high, like HIIT cardio and stuff. And you want to focus more on strength training. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. I was like, I need more of this in my life, right? Where it was like, because I do a lot of strength training, but then, you know, I'm always worried about like that version, you know.
I'm so glad to hear that you do.
Right?
That.
I do actually. And I do have a personal trainer who is wonderful and really, really is, you know, focuses on all the things you were talking about, which is like getting strong. And, but I do feel like with, you know, I also have so many clients who are just very sedentary and feeling really bad about it. And just joining the gym is not enough for them, but they can't afford a personal trainer. And so then it's like, well, then what? And a lot of that ends up being a mindset shift, which is like, why am I doing this? And that's where I think we get into, or we hit a wall often. So I really liked what you said about just like taking care of ourselves.
Yeah, I think coming at it from a place of like, instead of what's wrong with me and I need to fix this, coming at it from a place of like, I don't feel great. I feel like I want to take care of myself. I want to nurture myself. I want to do this from a place of, I don't even want to say self-love, you know, but from a place of like self-acceptance. This is the way things are right now, but I know that there are things that I can do to help myself feel better. I see more for myself. Coming at from a place of like abundance and not like, I can't do this. I can't eat that. I can't, you know, like, let's fill ourselves up with more of the good stuff.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm so glad you're lifting weights and strength training. That's so great to hear.
Yeah. So what are some of the things you find that you work on the most with clients? And are you like armchair diagnosing them all now?
Not all of them. when a potential client comes to me and they set up a consultation, I'm going to meet with them face to face. Right now, I have people that I work with. I'm really grateful to say I have people that I work with in 6 different time zones. And so I think that's so cool that technology allows for, you know, us to connect in this way. And I like to get into kind of figuring out, I find that clients kind of need different things. Sometimes they need help like with the mindset side of things. Sometimes they need a lot of help with accountability, and they need a lot of like frequent touch points. Sometimes they want like a strategy, or they really like to know the why. And sometimes it's a combination of all of that. So I try to like pull that out, you know, where I can like best serve them. I also often find that when somebody meets with me for an initial consultation, that their motivation is very high. And that is great. But I also know that motivation is a very finite resource. It's not something that it's something that kind of ebbs and flows, and it's not something that we can really rely on over the long term. So I think that helping them kind of, you know, get down to like a deeper why, like, okay, you want to lose weight, because that's a very common one. I want to lose weight. Well, why do you want to lose weight? I want to fit back in the clothes that I did, you know, when I had before I had kids. Okay, well, why? And, you know, we kind of try to go deeper, and sometimes it kind of comes down to some of these things of like, there's something wrong with me, or like, I want to feel, you know, anyway, so that's one element of it. I think that also looking at motivation is great. Your motivation is high. Let's take advantage of this. But also, we've got to look to your environment. And this, I love, have you ever read James Clear's Atomic Habits?
Yes.
Very, very popular. Yes. So, you know, he talks a lot about this, of kind of like motivation, instead of focusing or trying to leverage your motivation, leverage your environment instead. So something I try to work really, really hard right off the bat with someone, and I try to meet everybody where they're at as best I can, because people are coming to you with different experiences, different knowledge or confusion, you know, things that we have to kind of unlearn. So challenge them from there, you know, in an appropriate way. And so it's one of those things like, okay, hey, let's look around your environment. If I tell you, okay, you need to eat this much food and you need to work out, you know, you need to do this and this and that, and give you all these numbers and all these calories, that might be, and not usually going to do that for anybody, but that's going to be a lot for some people. So, hey, let's look around your environment. Right now, you know, you're getting home from work at 6 o'clock at night, and you've got 3 kids, and your husband's, I'm a military spouse. I work with quite a few military spouses. Your husband's deployed, and you're telling me like you don't have time to make something healthy. Okay, like let's look at that, you know, or, you know, let's look at where you do have time. So I'm often getting in there and getting to know what their kind of day-to-day environment looks like, where are the supportive parts of their environment, and where are maybe the elements of their environment that are kind of getting in their way or causing friction. So that's often where I really like to dig in, is starting with the environment. And if the environment is modified to be a little bit more supportive, I mean, and some other examples, you know, maybe you lift 2 days a week, but then you have, you know, go for a walk during this time of day, or, you know, you go for a walk each day instead of thinking that you have to go to the gym every single day. Or, you know, for the people that can, you know, source this, maybe we use grocery delivery or like a meal kit service or something like that. Or looking at some really like simple meal prep options, or just, it's kind of like going to be very individualized. But I think that looking at environment and explaining that motivation is going to come and go, but if their environment is more supportive, that's going to be more conducive to them being able to continue and be consistent. That's the other thing I often hear, is I want to lose weight, or I want to have a healthy lifestyle. I want to live a healthy lifestyle. I hear that a lot. But what that means is that this is something that's a long-term goal for you. You want something sustainable. You want a healthy lifestyle for the rest of your long, long life. That's wonderful. But these extreme all or nothing challenges and short-sighted tactics are not going to be a great match. If you want something that's sustainable and long-term, then we need to be approaching it from that point of view. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I know. Consistency. I mean, even just acknowledging how difficult it is, I think is one thing. But I like that how you connected the fact that we do tend to go like all in the beginning, and that that might actually, you know, not work in our favor when it comes to pulling back. And so how do you like temper your enthusiasm in the beginning? Because I always feel like that's one of the things I love about ADHD is going 150% into something in the beginning. You know, it's funny with Atomic Habits, like one of the only things I really took from that book was the part where like I asked myself, what would healthy Katie do right now? I don't know if you remember that, but he was talking about somebody in the book who was like, every time they were faced with the elevator or the stairs, they would be like, what would the healthy version of me do? And
Yeah. That identity and how you see yourself kind of goes back to that self-worth and, you know, trying to fix yourself. It's kind of like that identity piece of how do you view yourself now? And yeah, I took that. That was a big takeaway for me.
Yeah, too. Right. Well, and I think the other thing I like about it is that it's like just like right here, right now, what's this one decision that I'm in control over? And it's not like, what is the next year? What are the next 10 years going to look like? But it's really like bringing it back down to just like, what is the decision I can make right now? And I think that's another one that's really difficult for us because we like to think about all the things all the time.
Oh, yes. Yes. That execution piece. And so that kind of like you were saying is like, you know, a lot of my clients do struggle with consistency. And so it's about, I would almost rather, and that's why I do with a lot of my clients, we start out simple, like even maybe simpler than they think they should or they need to. And not everybody. Some people are ready to optimize things. Like sometimes I'll say, we need to focus more on execution over optimizing or what's ideal. We just need to focus on taking action. But sometimes we can get a little bit more complex and optimized. And I'm all for that for the individual who's ready for that. But it's like, what is going to be kind of the minimum effective dose? What is the smallest amount that we can do that's going to have the greatest impact? And then from there, that's where, you know, like with coaching and counseling, is that's where that layering of like the accountability and the systems that I have in place for them to then touch base with me, and we're celebrating those wins. And, you know, and then they start to see, okay, I've been in this for a couple of weeks, I'm doing this. Oh, now I'm feeling better, I'm seeing some changes. Okay, like I'm doing this, you know. So that's the fun part. Then it's like, okay, you know, you can do this. And they start to realize, wow, I had a client who shared with me the other day, she had done 200 and she said, I just finished my 201st workout. And I said, since I first started with you. And I said, that's amazing. Like, that's incredible. You know, that's consistency. There you go. You're doing it.
Well, I'm curious, your thoughts on the military too, because my theory is that the military is filled with people with ADHD because there's such intense structure and such regimen. And I think that's really appealing when you're young and you are in that kind of like, I'm feeling adrift, or, you know, there's some, like when I was in high school, I dreamt of joining the military for that same reason where I was like, I just want to be in a system. Like, I just want, you know, to have somebody yell at me to do push-ups, or, you know, like all of that. I'm sure it's not like that, but the stereotype of like, you know, waking up to the bugle and just all of the structure that was really, really appealing. Now I realize to my ADHD brain. So I'm curious if you spending a lot of time around military families, does that land?
It lands really hard. It's so funny that you say that because, you know, not to divulge all of my brother's information, my family history and stuff, but my youngest brother, he recently joined the Air Force and he's really, you know, starting to get into his job assignment and his new base. And he's, you know, really starting to kind of build this life for himself. And he's newly married. And I had mentioned to my husband, who's been in for 16 years, I said, this is so great for my brother. I said, and he has ADHD and I think he'd be okay with me telling you that. And he seems to be doing really well and it seems to be benefiting him in a lot of positive ways. And I'm sure there are going to be, you know, like anything, there's going to be some downsides to it, but he seems to be really like thriving under that structure and that discipline. And I agree with you. I think that a lot of people with ADHD probably like can thrive. And I don't know, you know, the exact statistics, but I think that there's that element of being able to
you've got those like woven in structures and it's, you know, regimented, and I can see it being really valuable for sure. I know that for me, as I was finishing undergrad, I went to school for education, and I was once upon a time, a very long time ago, I was an elementary school teacher. But it's so funny, and this goes back to like all the different, you know, jobs and interests and things I've tried over the years. I was literally getting ready to graduate with my education degree, and I was interning in an elementary school and getting ready to start applying for jobs. And meanwhile, I was working out with an officer recruiter and getting ready to prepare for, you know, put in an OTS packet. And so it's just funny. I didn't end up doing that. I did end up becoming a teacher, but then I ended up becoming a personal trainer. And thankfully I've stuck with that. And I love it. It is the best fit, but it's just so funny because it really appealed to me. I mean, even sometimes I joke with my husband, I think I'm just going to go and join the military, but I'm not going to. But yes, I totally agree. The only thing though, and I don't know how much you know about this, and I don't know, I will say, like, I'm definitely not an expert, but I don't know that they can join, that people can join the military and be, I don't know that they can be like formally diagnosed or that they can be treated with medication. I don't really know enough about that, but I think that there's some things there that, at least as of right now, that are that might limit them.
I know. I think that's the great irony, is a lot of the stigma around that diagnosis. You know, even yeah, I think pilots definitely can't be diagnosed with it. So yeah. But yeah, it's funny that you mentioned teaching too, because I feel like that's another career that we all flock to. I feel like every, you know, teaching, nursing, there's like a list.
Hey friend, if there's one thing I've learned about ADHD over the last few years, is that we can thrive with the right combination of accountability, planning, coaching, and peer support. Knowing all this, I set out to create the ultimate all-in-one coaching and accountability community for adults with ADHD or learning disabilities. I knew I couldn't do it alone, so I joined forces with one of my favorite ADHD coaches, Alex Gilbert of Capable Consulting, and together we launched the ADHD Lounge. The Lounge was created as a safe place for neurodivergent adults away from other social media, where we offer live group calls, co-working, and body doubling every weekday for accountability, focus, and skill development. We have weekly and monthly goal planning sessions to keep yourself on track. We also have one-on-one office hours with myself and Alex. And of course, friendship and lots of peer support. We have 3 different membership levels to meet you where you're at. So if you're looking for an affordable way to stay connected, productive, and accountable, while also having regular access to ADHD coaching and expertise, then make sure to come join me in the ADHDlounge.com. Again, that's the ADHDlounge.com. And as a listener of the Women in ADHD podcast, you can get 30% off your first month with the code PODCAST30. So head to the ADHDlounge.com and use the code PODCAST30 to get 30% off your first month. During the early days of my diagnosis, as I was deep into hyper-focus ADHD research mode, I kept searching for some kind of all-in-one, everything you ever needed to know about ADHD in women handbook that I could reference and keep at my fingertips, but I never really found anything that suited me. That's why I've taken everything I've learned about ADHD in women and adults who are socialized as girls, and I've gathered it into a concise, easy-to-access, self-guided, and self-paced course so you can feel like you've got everything you need at your fingertips. It's called Hey, It's ADHD, and it has everything you need to start loving your brain and living a more fulfilling, gratifying life. I built this course to be helpful wherever you are on your ADHD journey. I am so excited to finally be able to offer this course, and I truly hope this will help you develop a deeper understanding of your ADHD brain and how to embrace it as you build yourself a toolkit for your own life. So head over to womenandadhd.com and click on the Hey, It's ADHD course tab for more information and to get started. One of the things, you know, after my diagnosis and over the years, learning like how important it is to have help and to have supports, right? And to have that structure. So it's really difficult to build that for yourself in this world, especially in a Western culture where it's built on the fundamentals of our society, our independence and picking yourself up by your bootstraps and a lot of those things that make living with ADHD even more difficult. But I'm like, gosh, I feel like, you know, it would be so nice to have more careers or just more situations that are communal, you know? And I think about, like, I remember like guests that come from countries or cultures that are more communal.
it's like ADHD doesn't necessarily exist. I mean, obviously it does, but it's like, you know, there, I don't know what I'm trying, I'm getting all bumbled up, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, there's certain cultures that I think are so much more amenable to an ADHD, and US is not one of those.
Mm-hmm. And then also it's like, then there's that element of like, I mean, I relate so well, and it's something I'm really working to be like more vulnerable and more like just open about asking for help or even like seeking help. And or receiving help if somebody offers, or for me, I have ADHD, and then I'm very talkative, but I'm very naturally introverted. Like that's my default. Is I'm very comfortable. I get very drained in social settings. I'm very comfortable being alone and in solitude, almost to a fault sometimes. But then that's something I also know that I need, and I benefit from some connection and you know in certain settings. And I think that when it comes to like with those of us who have ADHD who struggle like with a lot of like masking, you know, I think back to like when I was a brand new mom and I was really struggling with, we call it postpartum depression, or just I struggled a lot after I had my first daughter. And like I wasn't really willing to receive help. I did not know how and was not willing to ask for help. But then nobody, like if you looked at me, I like had it all together, but I didn't. And yeah, I just totally agree that if there was more of a, if that was just part of the environment, it's just more focused in connection, I think that would be beneficial for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I think parenting and babies is such a great example of that, where, you know, a couple generations ago, you wouldn't have been living far away from your parents. You probably might have been living in the same home as them. Like there were much smaller communities. There, those systems were built in. And so we weren't as alone as brand new parents as we tend to be now. And, you know, ADHD and babies is never a great combination.
Wow. Thankfully, my youngest is getting ready to turn 4 in a couple of days. So we're, you know, kind of moving into this different phase. But yeah, that you're sleep deprived. And I don't know about for you, Katie, but like when my sleep is not good, my symptoms are so much more difficult to manage. It is much more of a struggle. And so, you know, you have a new baby and you're a new mom trying to like figure out what your identity even is, and the ADHD, and you're tired, and it's a lot.
It is. It is a lot. I had somebody, one of my classmates recently was just announced that she was pregnant. And I was like, oh, that's great. Congratulations. And then she was sort of like, I know, but I'm terrified because all you would do is talk about how hard babies are. I was like, I don't know. It's great. But I think it's a good example of like, you need support and you need to ask for it. And that's not always the hardest, or that's not always the easiest thing to do. And even if you do ask for it, you know, sometimes it's, you have to then follow up and you have to follow through, and then you have to feel like, you know, help is complicated, I guess is my point.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thankful. I work with quite a few moms and a good handful of new moms, and that's so special to me and is really, truly a privilege for me. You know, and I think like a lot of us ADHDers, we come at life with just our default mode is like super, like highly sensitive or like super, you know, empathetic. And so I just have like a really special soft place in my heart for the new moms that I get to work with, you know. And sometimes when we're checking in, about their, you know, they're working on, but also it's like, you know, how did you practice self-kindness and stress management this week? We're definitely talking about their sleep and how are you? You know, how are you doing? How can I help you? And so it's a tough, but wonderful at the same time. Like I can look back on those days and they were really, really hard for me. They were also like really wonderful in a lot of ways too. But parenthood is just all the different, you know, ages and stages. Now I have a middle schooler and a preschooler, and that's a big gap in and of itself, but try to embrace it as much as I can. And remember, it's going to be fleeting. And now your kids are much older, so you understand what I'm saying.
I know, I do. And I'm like, I feel like every year gets better and better. But I also, like you said, I loved it. You know, it's not, I do talk very much about how difficult it was and how there is a part of me that really wants to go back and give myself a hug back then, because I was just so hard on myself. And that's where I feel like it's difficult, where I'm like, yeah, I wish I knew you know, that I wasn't the problem. Like you said, you know, I wish I knew that it wasn't, I just needed sleep. And I wasn't a bad mom. I think that's the one thing I was so convinced I was just doing everything wrong. And that's the person I want to go back and hug. It's not the babies that were the problem, really.
Yeah. I needed to hear like, Holly, you're doing a really good job. You're definitely working hard enough. I know you think you're not working hard enough. I know you think you're messing all this up, but you're not. You're doing an awesome job and you're working plenty hard.
Oh, I love that. I know. I always joke with my personal trainer that like the first 15 minutes of our session are basically therapy.
Oh yeah. They're probably a great trainer then.
I know, right? So, you know, I love what you talked about just in terms of that dynamic with your clients. Are there other things since your diagnosis that you've been able to say, like, I really like this about this and this is about me and it's thanks to my ADHD?
I am really grateful, like I mentioned, for my ability to, I guess, I'm sensitive to people's, I try to be sensitive to people's emotions and my ability to hyper-focus, like, because I truly so fascinated. I try to stay really up to date on the current research in exercise science and nutrition. I like devour these like monthly journal reviews and research reviews. And I just really love this stuff. And I feel very fortunate. And like I said, I feel very privileged that I like anybody who contacts me and they're just like, hi, I'd like for you to help me with this. I'm like, thank you so much. This is awesome because I am very interested in it. And I think that it's amazing that I can help somebody while it may not be their passion or, you know, interest. That's okay because I can still help them feeling better, just feeling, you know, improving their health and their well-being in some way. So I'm really thankful for that. Those traits of, I think like being, you know, maybe highly sensitive and being being able to hyper-focus. And then I think also I have this, that word of resilience. And sometimes I cringe at the word resilience. You hear it a lot in the military community, like, oh, your kids are so resilient and your family's so resilient. I'm like, I know we're very resilient, but truly I am really grateful for my resilience because I know like I have had to work very hard, sometimes harder than, you know, anybody else in the room to do the same thing. But it's made me, that resilience, like I'm okay with making mistakes. And I understand that about myself better now, is that maybe in the past I really struggled with making mistakes. Whereas now that I understand this about my brain, I can be more open to that and more open to, you know, learning new things. And so I'm grateful for that as well. Kind of that resilience that, you know, a lot of us, whether we want to or not, a lot of us with ADHD are pretty darn resilient.
I totally agree. And I kind of like wonder if it has something to do with working memory, because sometimes I feel like I get over things really quickly. Like I do not hold grudges. I'm just like, I can like today I'll be like, this is the worst thing that has ever happened to me. And I will be so dramatic and I will catastrophize. And my husband will, you know, be like, oh gosh. Okay. And then the next day he'll say like, are you okay? And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm fine. I moved on. And I'm like, I kind of feel like it has something to do with like just how terrible my memory is, because I do move on really quickly. I don't know if I think that's part of resilience too, which is just being able to say like, yeah, no, it's fine. That's in the past.
I completely relate to that. I've had to explain to my husband, you know, from time to time, we have a disagreement or two, and I've had to explain to him, like, listen, I just want to talk about it. We need to get it sorted out. We need to get on the same page. And, you know, if you owe me an apology and you apologize and I owe you an apology, I am moved on. Like it is in the past. I am not dwelling on it. I am not holding grudges. I'm not resentful. Like I already forgot about it. Totally. Totally. Yep. I agree with you. And it probably is something with the working memory. Like, wait, why were we even disagreeing in the first place? Let's watch a movie.
But it's, you know, I think it is true what you say about like, just really genuinely, there is so much empathy involved in the way in which we relate to other people. And I think also, you know, often wanting other people wanting to help others see what we have learned, right? Like save, you know, I always feel like if I can save one woman from feeling terrible about herself, it will make it all worth it, right? And so I think there's that feeling of like what you're doing really is in the helper, you know, realm, that helper community of nurses and teachers, right? Where it's like, you really do just want to help other people succeed and to find their why. And I think it is really, really noble. And like I said, I'm my own personal trainer is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me because she has really helped me shift that, right? And to come to, some, you know, a lot of those things where, you know, a lot of that idea of just consistency and feeling showing up for yourself is something that I think a lot of us really struggle with. And so it makes perfect sense that you would really deeply connect with the wins of your clients. And then that, again, is so reciprocal, right? It's so motivating. It's so helpful to us when we help other people too. And I think that's how so many of us end up in these helping professions.
Yes, it is so fulfilling and rewarding and sometimes exhausting, but just really like, really wonderful. I completely agree with you.
You had a really good alternative name for ADHD, which what would you call it if you could?
Yes. I would call it VF. I had to write this one down. VF3S, and that would stand for Variable Focus and Stimulation Sensitivity Syndrome.
I love it. Yeah. Because it really is, gosh, stimulation sensitivity syndrome. Again, I'm sort of like, would that have made any sense to me? Because I never used to think I was like, had sensory issues. If you would ask me if I had sensory issues, I would have been like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. Because I would have pictured something much more extreme. Now, on the other hand, I look back and I'm like, oh yeah, like I can't have overhead lighting or, you know, they sweat. There's only like, I own 50 sweaters, but I only ever wear like three of them. That sort of thing where it's like, you know, I like do have a lot of sensory issues, but I'm also, I feel like stimulation sensitivity. That's a good one. That's sort of like the hyperactivity versus hyper arousal, right? Which is like, yeah, I like that word. Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I mean, I literally have been playing with this thing the whole time we've been talking and that's helped me to like, just make sure I'm on track and focusing. But then also I think you had mentioned this on a couple podcasts ago. I listened to all of your episodes, Katie. you had mentioned it. I think it was something about, for me, I related it to when I'm brushing my teeth, I am also like watching a YouTube video or listening to a podcast. And I'm also like maybe setting an alarm. Like I'm walking around doing something and putting something away, like getting ready. Like if I'm doing my hair or something, I'm so bored by that. I don't want to do it. And so like, I have to be doing lots of other things while I'm doing that. So it's that like constant, like we just needing stimulation, but then also knowing when we really don't need stimulation, being able to come down from that. So that I think, you know, kind of goes back to like nutrition and fitness. Sometimes I think with ADHD, some of us might struggle with like eating to stimulate, to get some sort of stimulation or like, you know, dopamine. Yeah, there's a lot there.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, for sure. It's funny that you bring that up because I have I use the Quip toothbrushes and they have the little like buzzer that goes off every 30 seconds, but they come with an app now, their new like updated version of them. It comes with an app and it literally will tell you if you've how much time you spend on the top of your mouth versus the bottom of your mouth. And so I'm like trying to pay attention each time there's a 30 second buzzer. If I'm like, okay, now I have to move from the top to the back, but I'm also like walking around and doing my night routine and like opening windows and closing windows. And like it's driving me crazy because I'm like, I cannot pay attention. But I also, there's the ADHD part of me that wants to be a good student. So I want to have perfect 50% top and bottom. And so, of course, eventually I was like, that's it. I'm deleting the app. So I just imploded. I was like, I can't do this anymore, Quip. I'm sorry. I'm breaking up with you. But it seemed like such a good thing in the beginning. But it was just too much.
This is not a Quip sponsored post.
Yes, I am not sponsored by them. I do love their toothbrushes, though.
But
that is funny. What were we even talking about with the, what brought that up?
With the just variable like stimulation and like seeking, kind of like seeking different types of stimulation or, you know.
Oh, right. Yeah. Or even just like when my kids were little and I didn't, you know, and we'd put them to bed and my husband would lean into me and I'd be like, don't touch me, please. The don't touch me feelings, right?
Being touched
out. Where you're like touched out. Yeah, that was a phrase that I had a really hard time explaining to him when my kids were little. And now I'm like, oh, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I just don't. And especially in those early days with babies, it's very much. Yeah. It's like, I know I just want to just be in comfy clothes completely by myself. Yeah. You can sit there, but just don't touch me. Yep.
Well, that's awesome. So I guess if you listen to my podcast, you know how often I repeat myself. That's the other thing, right?
Oh, same here. That's okay. It's great. It's good for our memory.
That's true. I love that. Well, this has been great. Thank you so much. And like I said, I love what you're doing and I really love your messaging. And I will definitely have your website. It's
hdfitnesscoach.com.
Yes. I will put a link to that in the show notes, of course. Why? What is HD Fitness? Now, of course I'm going to go.
I really don't even remember. Oh, okay. I just know. Yeah. Yeah. And I have some Google reviews. If you Google HD Fitness LLC, but if you Google HD Fitness, I think it's just like maybe an apparel company or something like that, but its website is hdfitnesscoach.com.
Okay. Yeah. I'll definitely have that in the show notes. And you work virtually. I could take it with clients almost. Do you work in person and virtually or almost exclusively virtually?
I currently have a little bit of in-person work that I do. I have a couple of clients, they come to my house and we get to train together, which is great. But just because of the nature of being a military spouse and just, you know, business over time, it's made the most sense for me to be primarily remote at this time. So yeah, I'd say the majority of my work is definitely virtual and remote. But what that is really wonderful because then I can work with people, you know, wherever their clients who are in Europe and South America and Japan. And so, yeah, wherever you are, I can work with you.
Yeah, no, that is amazing. Do you guys move around a lot?
Well, we moved here. I live in Florida currently, and we moved here last summer. And that was our fourth move in 5 years, almost 5 years to the day. So not 5.5 years or almost 6 years. It was fourth move in 5 years. But we should be here for a little while, a couple of years. And then my husband will be retiring. He's in his last six years before he retires, which seems like a long time, but it goes by quickly.
Yeah. Wow. So do you like the moving a lot? Or I feel like that would kind of be fun for somebody with ADHD.
It's a loaded question. I enjoy it. And I definitely get to a point where I really enjoy the first couple of months in a new place and being anonymous and just kind of like being able to explore a new area. But also because I am naturally more introverted but I also know that I benefit from social interaction from time to time and community and connection. It's one of those things that I have not been great at seeking it out in the past couple of years. And it's one of those things that finally I feel like I'm just now here in Florida starting to really be able to like nurture that need for myself, which is really wonderful. It's something that I'm kind of rediscovering and realizing like that I've, you know, benefit from. So yeah, we love traveling. Like that's one of our favorite things to do for fun as a family. We love exploring new places. And I am so grateful for the military lifestyle that we've been able to live in so many different places and so many different wonderful places overall. But there are drawbacks for sure. And it's exhausting. We did that. I mean, my 3-year-old daughter has lived in, this is her fourth home. She lived in 4 different houses before, you know, that's crazy. My oldest daughter's gone to 8 different schools and she's in 5th grade.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, no, I could see that too. But it must be nice to be able to continue to see clients, even if you're moving, and also to be able to offer and like connect with other military wives who are probably going through the same thing. And who knows, probably have ADHD too, because
some of them do. And it really is. It is really, I feel super
grateful and lucky that I'm in this position. I think it's really cool. It's fun too, because when we travel, it's like, oh, we have a friend in this state. We have a friend in this state. You know, it's really neat when you think about it. So yeah, I feel very grateful that in 2024, we can work with people virtually from anywhere in the world and, you know, be able to support one another and connect for sure.
It just occurred to me, because I know you said that your husband was not surprised at all. But what happened? Did you tell your brother? What was his response?
Yeah, they, so from what I understand, I have three brothers. And from what they have shared with me, from what I understand, two of the three of them were diagnosed with ADHD. Thing is that they were diagnosed as kids. And I think that there was just less information out about it, you know, and in our house, there was less communication about it and not understanding a whole lot about it. And so they were like, wow, like they were very supportive and happy that I was able to like find, you know, learn that about myself. And they're all, I mean, we are all very close. My dad passed in 2021, and me and my three brothers are very close. We talk almost every single day. And they were very supportive, and they're really good about, like, sometimes I'll share a podcast with them, or I'll share something I see, an article, because the reality is that it is very much hereditary. And so, and they have children as well. So it's, you know, really neat, I think, as their big sister to kind of share like my perspective and things that I've been struggling with, for them to keep an eye out, you know, maybe in their own lives or in the lives of, you know, their kids as they get older too. So yeah, they've been great. They're very supportive, and also probably not terribly surprised. Like, hey, sis, you're a lot like us, you know. You just do it in your own way.
I know. I have two older brothers, and I keep having those gentle, like, moments. Because neither of them has been diagnosed, but I'm like, you might want to look into that. But
yeah. Yep.
Well, thank you so much. This has been really lovely, and thank you for being open. I know I threw some surprise questions at you, but it was really fascinating.
No, it was just one of those things where I'm like, okay, I got to think about this one for a second. I loved it. This was a really fun conversation, and honestly, time flew by.
There you have it. Thank you for listening, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode of the Women and ADHD podcast. If you'd like to find out more about me and my coaching programs, head over to womenandadhd.com. If you're a woman who was diagnosed with ADHD and you'd like to apply to be a guest on this podcast, visit womenandadhd.com/podcast guest, and you can find that link in the episode show notes. Also, you know we ADHDers crave feedback, and I would really appreciate hearing from you, the listener. Please take a moment to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or Audible. And if that feels like too much, and I totally get it, please just take a few seconds right now to give me a 5-star rating. Or share this episode on your own social media to help reach more women who maybe have yet to discover and lean into this gift of neurodivergency. And they may be struggling and they don't even know why. I'll see you next week when I interview another amazing woman who discovered she's not lazy or crazy or broken, but she has ADHD. And she's now on the path to understanding her neurodivergent mind and finally using this gift to her advantage. Take care till then.